SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, back at Tucson and at the Lowe's Ventana Canyon Ranch. it always takes me a couple of hours of saying where we are before it kind of sinks in, the Lowe's Ventana Canyon Ranch. And it's lovely. And just you see the mountains and at every direction. That's such a unique, I think I called it a moonscape kind of a feel. I probably have come to the Southwest less than really almost any other part of the country. So it's always exciting to come here, and then fold in the great conversation and the atmosphere among industry participants and the students at University of Arizona. Makes it special. Certainly, it's been a special year for Rudy Brissett, who joins us and has had a little bit of everything going on this year with the Quip and Talk Verve to Me. And here at the end of the year is clearly excited and has to be delighted with positive spirit and the progress that this Pioneer of the Nile filly made on Saturday. Took a big step up into the stake company, stretched out gone the furthest, obviously 9 furlongs at this time of year, and positive spirit, a romping winner. And this sibling of Always Dreaming, of course, and Hot Dixie Chick, and Rudy Brissett joins us. Rudy, congratulations to you and Mike Ryan.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And she certainly figured to be, one of the players. She kind of got ignored in the betting, but boy, I mean, she just handled everything about this experience. Talk about positive spirit and Saturday.
Well, that was the whole idea. We told from the get-going, we always told she was a two-down horse, and even if we run her first time in Saratoga, going 7 furlongs, the goal was to try to break the maiden in Kinlan. It didn't happen. We didn't have the best trip, but she got it done the next race, going only a mile, and then we were pretty confident the mile and eighth wouldn't be a problem for her, and she showed up and she delivered, I guess.
You mentioned the debut, and 7 furlongs is always demanding. That we saw her debut at Saratoga, and she ran a good second half of the race. And then when you brought her to Keeneland in October, you gave her the 2-turn try, and again, she took another step forward. And this was the maiden win, cutting back to the 1-turn mile. I would have to think that experience at Keeneland really had to give her an advantage on Saturday, having already been 2 turns.
Yeah, for sure. But I think at the end of the day, that race, if you, knowing the filly and getting on her and being around her, that race in Keeneland really changed the whole thing for her. Like, the filly really, really started to understand what we were asking, and even if she got beat, that's where we saw the defense. So I would say cutting back to a mile was not idle. That was not what we were, what we really wanted to do. But we taught class and all the signs she was showing. We really taught she could overcome the cut in back to 1 turn, and she did. And then after that, she tried beautiful the past 3 weeks before that race.
What's fascinating too, to see a horse, Rudy, in a fourth start, and to see the you know, the development from a horse that, you know, kind of settled early and wasn't showing speed and obviously has made a lot of strides with the experience. It really shows what a horse gets out of racing. You know, there's only so much you can teach them in the mornings, but it's pretty evident that, you know, she kind of figured things out and understands what's happening out there. And even though she hadn't shown speed in her first two starts, now it looks like some of her tactical potential is really there. And she just did whatever Manny Franco was asking on Saturday.
Yeah. He did comment saying she kind of took him down and he didn't have much to do. Until he pushed the button and said, let's go, you know. But, I mean, you know, it's kind of what we like to do, try to develop horses. You know, taking them around the track on the morning, it's one thing, but at one point you do have to show them why they're doing that every day. So, we try to bring them, ready to run. You know, obviously we don't win first time out very often, but we try to develop horses to have a career from 2 to 3 and hopefully the 3 to 4. So it's really a goal for us.
Gotta be exciting and has to be a great feeling when you see a horse take control, burst away, and just keep on going. And you know, certainly Manny Franco is doing everything right, and I think on Saturday that included, Rudy, understanding where on the racetrack to be, because he was certainly better off out wide in those outer paths than being inside. It seemed like the rail was dead, and Manny is so savvy and is really distinguishing himself.
Yeah, I mean, the kid's been showing a lot of talents as a jock, you know, and he's very smart. He's, you know, leading. He lead in. I think he actually won the meet in Aquatic. So, you know, it just we thought it was going to be a very good fit for her. You know, it's difficult for us when you are a young band. We still have to prove ourselves to the jockey agent. And he was our fourth race and our fourth different rider, and you know, you kind of, when you like a horse, you kind of want to try to have a guy sticking with the horse. But I guess we may need couple more years to prove ourselves and having people sticking with the one we think they are good. So we just saw Manny will fit her, and he did, and he didn't really get in our way. And she took him around there, and he was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, very much. And it'll be fun to watch where things go from here. You'll be at Payson Park this winter.
Yeah, we already set up there. We have 25 heads there, and then we have a barn in Fairground too. So, but Payson would be our main barn, and you know, we got to make a plan for some of the good offices we have.
How about the portion of this for Mike Ryan and his work training for him and you know, basically getting this kind of a horse that with the pedigree that, I mean, is so distinguished, a classic winner and of course the sister, Hot Dixie Chick, she herself was a wonderful race filly. Talk about Mr. Ryan and working with him.
Well, I mean, I say I should thank him again, I guess. You know, it's the relationship we have with Winstar to begin with can bring some new clients around the barn, and Mike, you know, we met once and then talk, and he brings some horses from on his own, and then some of his clients, and He's been very supportive and a great help. So definitely that was another thing where I was really happy to see that Philly won, because, you know, our pedigree and the bred, you know, he bred her and owned her, and so that's really a main goal, to be able to get some black type with a Philly bred like this.
And it's really a compliment to you that he, you know, brought a filly like this to you that has that kind of a pedigree, that where there's expectation for, you know, for filly classic success.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess all that building the barn like this, it takes time, and you gotta prove yourself. You gotta show people you're doing right by the horse and the right thing. And I'm guessing Mr. Ryan saw the sign, and he's been you know, it's been great. The relationship with him and working together. He's a very good horseman too. You know, he's got a great eye, and I learned from him too. So it's I guess it's a win-win for him and for us.
You're coming back from California, and you were out, of course, yesterday to run in the Matriarch Mission Impassable. Talk about yesterday as well.
Well, the Philly got beat by four legs. We were maybe a little closer than what we were expecting up on the pace, but looking at the replay, I don't think we can. We have much excuse, you know. She put herself in a position where she could win the race, and she got tired the last eight. She only got beat by four legs, 3 years old against older. You just have, I guess you gotta, you know, you gotta see all the facts and end up with no excuse, I guess.
Well, and at the same time, you know, going out there and you know, just the one effort, and she ran, certainly, you know, ran a nice race in the QE2 before she came under your care. But, you know, you're also getting to know her as well. I mean, you've only had her for how long? A month?
Yeah, we only have her for a month. But the filly really saddled really good. I was actually very, very impressed the way she was able to saddle. The way she was able to saddle in the air, you know, it's everything is kind of was brand new, and you know, her walk were really, really good. You know, we were coming here with some confidence, end up got bait, but you know, she will be back.
What kind of a winter do you expect for her? And I mean, she'll be in Florida, I expect. But you know, you're starting horses in a lot of places too. I mean, you're looking obviously at Tampa, and I see you've had starters at Fairgrounds already.
Well, I mean, you got to go. I guess you're going where the race fits the office too. So
sure.
We're really not scared to ship and run where they belong and where we think they belong anyway. So, you know, you got to have a great team. We try to put together the right people, the right horses, and then from there we just look right and left. You know, I was able to, over the years working for Mr. Mott, I was able to do a lot of shipping like this and run, and so you learn, and so makes things easier when you're on your own, you know.
Absolutely. And you did say a lot of the nice young horses that are in your care, and a couple of them have, you know, came up as the, you know, as the fall was unfolding, including Preamble and also the Quality Road Colt too, Bluegrass Parkway. Talk a little bit about the other 2 year olds that are kicking around.
Well, you know, Preamble, we kind of give him a little time off after his second win. He's 2-4-2. I mean, the way he won and his number came back pretty fast. So we of course we pretty high on him. We're going to try to map a 2019 race plan I guess, focus maybe on sprinting 6-7 furlong and then try to win a great one with him if he's good enough. And then Rugas Parkway, he's down in Payson. We should have him running one more time this year, but he's a very, very well bred horse, and we like him.
Both have been eye catching, and you mentioned Preamble 2-for-2 as Spitestown, but out of Beautician, who of course Kenny McPeak had, and that was that portion of the pedigree, Rudy, was a little intriguing, and he was part of the Derby future wager. So you seem like you want to keep him short. You don't have plans to stretch him anytime soon.
Well. He doesn't, I don't know, showing what he's been showing to us, and we think he's going to be more a sprinting type. Now, I don't know if we want to try at one point a little longer, but I really don't feel like he wants to be a two-turn. If you go back on the Beautician pedigree, she actually ran her best races going one turn. She won the Leather Stakes in Fairground going 6 furlong, and run a huge number in Saratoga going 7 furlong. So, and him being by Spicetown, I think we, as now, we may stay focused on the one turn, but I guess you got to try to find out if he show us he wants to try a little longer, we may try, but I don't know if right now he's not right now where we're leaning to.
Fair enough. And I will ask about another one, though, that may have more license to stretch out for the same team, and that's Federal Case. What's gone on with Federal Case since the maiden win at Keeneland?
Well, we don't play in Federal Case anymore. The horse he went through the sale in the...
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. It fetched a lot of money. That's right.
Yeah, he bring the horse got bring a lot of money, and
that's right.
He didn't come back to us, so I think Mr. Pletcher got him now, and he should hopefully be a nice horse,
That's right, because he in the 600,000 range, and right after the win, and not long after the win, and the Lowe's, Bob and Luana Lowe, bought him. That's right. Nice. Well, I mean, it's still a feather in your cap too that you take a gemologist and turn him around and make money for the Winstar team. That's a feather in the cap too. So nicely done. Obviously, Rudy, a lot of good things to look forward to this winter, starting with Positive Spirit and then into the rest. What about some of the older horses?
Well, we pretty much have everybody back in Payson right now. So Talk Buff to me is she's enjoying the sun over there. We've been gunning her out and doing some light training and and then we got the Black Album, who is going to turn 3, and we're pretty confident about him having a good year next year. So, we were able to put a nice group of horses together, and then hopefully we can win more races.
The stars from earlier in the year? What about the filly? Talk Viv to me.
Well, we don't know.
She's
yet.
Gone.
It's going to be
no.
Yeah, he's gonna be. I mean, she's in Payson, and she may run once down south. But we gotta try to get focused more on the second part of the year, and try to win a good stakes with her.
Excellent. Well, just on the basis of the clientele that have come your way. It's been a special year for you. It's finishing as strong as it went, whether it was Quip and Talk Viv and now the emergence of this filly and these good young two-year-old colts as well. Rudy, safe travels back. Best wishes for the holidays, and congratulations on not just the win Saturday, but a great year.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Rudy Brissett, everybody. And Brissett has really had a breakthrough year. And you talk about the clients, whether it was Ryan and Team Valor and the Windstar Group and their partners. It really has been a special campaign from start to finish for Brissett, and operating able to move horses wherever the opportunities arise, and keep an eye on all those young horses as he gets ready to start unleashing them as the trail unfolds. Let's take a top. We're past the top of the hour, so we'll come back, and Johnny D is going to join us. Johnny's been out to Arizona any number of times over the years and has participated in the symposium. We'll catch up with Johnny D after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. First post is at 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. On Saturday, December 8th, don't miss a doubleheader of stakes racing action with the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity and the Grade 1 Starlet for two-year-old fillies. Bob Baffert will go after his fifth straight win in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity, while past Starlet winners include champions Take Charge Brandy and Abel Tasman. All the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Plus, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick 4's return. The wager has been well-received and the pool's figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick 6 wager. And don't miss our live money handicapping contest on Saturday, December 8th. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Johnny, we're sorry. Won't you come on home? We're worried. Won't you come on? What is wrong in my life? I must get drunk every night. Johnny.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes. Into hour two from Tucson. Nice swing here, our third time at Symposium, University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program that sends, I don't want to say just young people, because it's not, I say this all the time, it's not confined just to undergrad types, older people that have decided they wanted to come to the racing industry, and this is just a great launching point for that. Johnny certainly familiar and has been out here over the years. Obviously, it was easier, Johnny, to come to symposiums when you were California-based. Good morning.
Morning, Stevie. Yeah, it was easier when I was California-based, a lot closer. Made the drive over one time with Eddie Gregson. He was speaking there, and we made the drive over. Had a great time. Visited some crazy artist house down by the border. It was wild. It really was wild. But the time with Kids to the Cup and Trudy McCaffrey. She was the late Trudy McCaffrey. She started Kids to the Cup, founder, and also she won an award there, the Clay Pewitt Award, I believe it's called, and that's the top award. It was for the Kids to the Cup. It was an award for a great organization that she founded. So that was wonderful. And then we had so many of our Kids to the Cup members go through the University of Arizona program. They went to college there, and it was also great to get there and see them. But my first trip to Arizona to some not I should check that my most memorable trip. First, I have to apologize, or I think you should apologize to your listeners. I think you owe them a little bit of an apology. Well, not a big one, but just a little one. Following Rudy Brissett with me, I have a question. Who has a stronger accent, Rudy Brissett or me?
He's got the stronger accent. You have the more distinctive tones. Yeah.
It was funny when I first went out to California and I'd order a hot dog. And they'd look at me, hot dog, where are you from? And they say hot dog out there, hot dog. You say hot dog. And water, that one always used to get me in trouble too. It's water. If you're in California, it's water. If you're from Philly or New York, it's water. But anyway, so back to the symposium. I was working for You Bet, one of the first ADW companies, You Bet, and we're doing a presentation at the symposium. Our co-founder and president, I believe was his title. No, co-founder. I don't know if he was the president. Anyway, he was doing the presentation, David Marshall. And Catherine Wilkins was our director of marketing. And I was some flunky just working there. I didn't really have a title. And we were at a table. And, you know, he David was on the stage. And the room was jam-packed. The ballroom was completely packed because this was the first time that a wide audience was going to get to see ADW wagering. You know, how it was going to work, what it was going to be, what it would look like. This was a maiden voyage. And David was on stage and he was in the middle of his speech, or just beginning his speech. And he turned around, and he had a big screen behind him. And we were at the projector trying to get things to work so that, you know, it would show on the screen. And we couldn't do it. We couldn't get that thing to work. And so here was this new technology, this crack technology company that had arrived on the scene that was going to, you know, change racing, the way racing is consumed, certainly. And we couldn't get the thing to work. It was, I'm going to say, and it may have been my most embarrassing moment in my life. You know, the sweat breaks out. And you're trying to figure out how to, is it hooked? Is it this? Is it that? And everyone's been there. You've tried to do these presentations,
sure.
And they never, ever work. And Catherine and I were just, we were lost. And this was a big moment, you know. We're a public company, and you know, I think we were at that time. Maybe not. Anyway, it was a big deal, and it didn't work out. Thankfully, Yvette survived the moment, and David Marshall, the boss, didn't get too mad at us. Kind of knew it wasn't our fault. And it's funny because, you know, Catherine was marketing, and I was, you know, handicapping, writing, broadcasting, that kind of stuff. Neither one of us were very techno-savvy, so there really wasn't much we could do. We were kind of lost. But anyway, that was my most embarrassing moment. And by, you know, on the other side, I already talked about some of the great moments there, being with Trudy and, you know, the Kids of the Cup. It was just, those were some great years at the symposium. So I don't know what number symposium this must be. Do you know?
45th.
Wow.
How about that?
Well, I was not there for the first one. I'm gonna make a point to say that I was not there for the first one. Congratulations on your alma mater's victory. Colgate advances to play North Dakota State, and in the next step. By the way, you're lucky Carson Wentz already graduated. And
yes.
I guess North Dakota State has an outstanding running game this year that you're going to have to tamper down. Well, you won't, but Colgate will.
Now, it was a lot of fun. We went over to Hamilton, and it was a great atmosphere, and big crowd at Andy Kerr. And I was actually a huge turnout from people around my class, a whole bunch of players that Colgate football players that came and live, you know, within a certain scope. And my friend actually graduated with Henry Chen. Henry came all the way from L.A. For the game, which was I give him the blue ribbon, but really a lot of fun, and I put up a ton of pictures. And a lot of horse, but hey, there was a lot of horse conversation between Joe Caprio, who's in on one of our horses on Kid Chocolate, and Bob Pickenich, who was a terrific lineman at Colgate, my class 82 pick. And there was just one after another, people talking about Saratoga, Alex Mancini, who was a terrific Colgate quarterback, lives in the area, was a high school coach himself for many years, now retired. It was a delightful day. It was cold, but not miserable and uncomfortable. And then the game, you know, the game was a little, there was a couple of sloppy moments here and there, but you know, you win on a field goal in the last, you know, as time expires, that'll generally make for a, you know, a happy set of fans. It was really, I'm really glad. We, you know, Tina was sick all week, and I was worried we couldn't go, but she rallied late in the week, and we had just a really nice day. I put up a bunch of pictures, got to spend a couple of minutes with Fred Dunlap, who's a legend from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania originally, and was a longtime Colgate athletic director, famous coach, Lehigh too, is where he started his career, and really 90 years old and continues to, he's in great shape, amazing, just unbelievable to see Fred. And I'm really glad that it's one of those things, you know, you only get so many opportunities to see it. They you know, they have this FCS, you know, what used to be Division I AA, and you would think that the Division I college football, you know, the big boys, that they would learn from the playoff system that the FCS has, because it's really great. They put 24 teams in, and you know, they play out over 5 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is, and it works. It's exciting. I don't understand why they don't go to that in the other side of things.
Money might have something to do with it.
Well, it would still be moneyed. I mean, why wouldn't
Oh, I know what it is. I figured it out. You don't want to keep the kids out of class.
So. Oh, sure. They're really worried about that. Oh, that's their priority. You're absolutely.
You don't want to miss too much class time. That's what it is.
Yeah.
do you have your flight and room reservations for the Fargo Dome? I didn't know about the Fargo Dome. This was new to me.
That was news to you. The Fargo Dome is supposed to be a real tough place to go in and play. That North Dakota State is, you know, they're just a juggernaut and a ridiculous powerhouse. They've won, I mean, I don't know how many titles now, but yeah, it's going to be very tough to go in there and play. But it's on ESPN, so I get to watch it on Saturday.
Yes. And I installed you as early 10-point underdogs. In the game. I don't know what the official line is yet, but it's a tough place to play. However, it's Fargo. And strange things, according to the movie and the television series, strange things happen in Fargo. So anything's likely.
We went to the national championship, and actually I saw the semi that year. I saw the semifinal game because just so happened I was down visiting my parents, and in the semis we played Howard Schnellenberger and the Florida Atlantic FAU, and beat them, and that was a lot of fun seeing that. That was incredibly cool. And then Delaware killed us in the national championship at Chattanooga.
So this is Division 1A, is that what they call it?
It used to be called 1AA, and then now they call it the FCS, which is what? Football Championship. I don't even know what FCS stands for, frankly, but they call it the FCS. Whatever that means.
I may have told you this, but I played football at Occidental College in right near Pasadena. And the first day of practice, the coach, he said, "Gentlemen, welcome to NCAA Division III football. And there is no Division IV."
That's pretty good. By the way, Johnny, your line making, you're not going to be supplanting John Avello anytime soon.
What is it, 14?
26.5.
Oh, no, come on.
It's open to 26.5.
Well, I guess I got to take the points then.
Well, listen, they've won this team, this North Dakota State. You know, they beat teams by 40 as a matter of. They've covered 28.5, 31, 30.5, 22. I mean, they're scary. They're a scary outfit.
All right. Well, I'll take the points and we'll see what happens.
This is an
outstanding defense at Colgate.
Yeah, it is.
We're going to rely on that. We're going to rely on the defense to keep them in the game.
Hope so. I certainly hope so.
So there was a lot of great racing stuff this weekend, right? You talked about some of it earlier. You went through the Stronach 5, and then you talked about the Aqueduct. You had two trainers on from winning big stage races. But this is my life we're talking about now. Trevor is calling the winner of the Matriarch. Uni. Is he not a sushi fan? Is that... It's Uni.
It's Uni, yeah.
Is it not?
Yeah.
It's Uni. It's not Uni. It's Uni. I guess Trevor's not. I guess up there at the farm in Minnesota, they don't have any Uni swimming around in the lake.
Anyway. No. Every so often he will. Who was it that he famously? There was somebody that. He used to have a little funny intonation about a horse that, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Even the way he pronounces Zenyatta was even a little.
By the way, one of my favorite calls, it was Trevor and Zenyatta winning the Santa Anita. This is unbelievable. Zaniata, yep. One we'll never forget. I love that call. I love that call. Also, in my weekend, in my world, at the race went off at 4:53. It was the ninth at Tampa Bay, off at 4:53, and Brian Pedroza went wire to wire on the turf aboard Trophy Doll, and then at 5:00. Which is like 7 minutes later. So if the race went off at 4:53, you figure, you know, it was a turf race, figure a minute and a half, that's 4:54, 4:55. So like 4 minutes apart, his father, Marty Pedroza, wins the fourth at Del Mar, going wire to wire on Placido. And I just thought that, you know, how many other sports you have a father-son team competing at the same level,
yeah,
being successful 4 minutes apart. I thought that was just a weird kind of occurrence, you know. And I don't know why I noticed it. I just, you know. But you won't, you know, a lot of your guests won't be talking about that this week, and I just thought I'd start the week off right with a little racing trivia.
How did you fare with the Stronach 5 on Friday?
Yeah, I'm still struggling. I just, you know, they sneak them in on me here. Drop downs, that horse that paid the 35 in the last leg.
Yeah.
Drop downs are tough to deal with. You got to either, you know, you either put them in or you throw them out, one or the other. And probably in a race like that, you probably ought to keep them all in. But again, I got to say, 47, almost 4,800 for that combination.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. And then the handle, okay, we had 88K carryover. Handle goes 361. That's a nice number there. So maybe this wager is starting to get some legs. And I kind of wondered how it would handle this week, because, you know, you didn't have you had Laurel, three from Laurel and two from the gate, and you kind of wondered, well, are people, you know, going to sink their teeth into this? You did have the carryover, but you kind of wondered, are people going to? And they did. They jumped in, and. Of course, Gulfstream kicked off, and we can talk about that. And Santa Anita's right around the corner. It's not far now. So I guess if the magnifier, I mean, if the Stronach, got me. If the Stronach 5, you know what that's like? That's like the St. Louis Rams, the L.A. Rams, I mean.
Wow.
No, I mean the L.A., I mean the St. Louis, no. If it continues through the, which I don't know that there's an end date. I think it's kind of an open ended thing. You'll have Santa Anita races, Gulfstream races. I would think Laurel and Gold Gate, which will make it really interesting. Yeah. So anyway,
that harkens back. That harkens back to the Magna 5 era.
Here we go. Harkens back. The Magna 5. I miss it. It never left. It just changed its clothes.
Well, you mentioned the Gulfstream results, and of course they ran on Saturday. The season technically starts, even though the Claiming Crown is not. You know, it's not what the season really is, but certainly, you know, you certainly had your share of big prices that popped up. You can talk about that if you want. I also haven't yet detailed those changes from TOBA, from the American Graded State Committee, and that's being obviously always produces discussion. The Jiper, the Woody Stevens, and the Churchill Downs go up to grade ones, coming down from grade one to grade two. The Beldame the Foster, the Cash Golf Utility, Los Al, the Santa Margarita Triple Bend, and Zenyatta. Speaking of Zenyatta, those were the high profile changes. But there were a number of ups and downs, and it seems like sprint races got a lot of attention, both upgrades and downgrades.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I guess maybe we were a little light on grading for sprinters. I try and not, I don't get too wound up about this stuff because, I look at the panel and I know most of the racing secretaries and people on the panel, certainly Hammer and Tom Robbins and George Ann Hale and like, I know I'm forgetting someone, Martin Panza. And they're all, I've known these people for years, and they're all certainly very, very capable people. So I'm not going to argue too much with them, even though, you raise an eyebrow or something. I think the Zenyatta, if you look at just the winners of these races, some of them like the Zenyatta, you say, well, wow, these are pretty good names here. Valdori, Paradise Woods, Stellar Wind, Beholder, and Beholder. That's a grade one roster there. But then I guess you have to look at the depth of the field, and I don't know what else they all go into, but, to knock that down a peg, I don't know, Cash Call Futurity. You've got some nice names in that roster as previous winners. McKenzie, Mastery, More Spirit, Dortmund, Shared Belief. Pretty good names there. The Foster, I think that kind of lost its punch. Pavel, Gunrunner, certainly can't argue with him. Braidster, Noble Bird, and Moonshine Mullen. Okay, there I kind of see it a little bit. I was worried about the San Anita Handicap because it's taken, the Pegasus and Dubai, first off, Dubai, Breeders' Cup. San Anita Handicap has just had horrible, horrible luck. And the purse has been correspondingly diminished in that time, which makes sense. And I just thought that maybe, I hope they don't, I get it. And I guess if the Foster can drop, I guess the San Anita Handicap is probably not far behind. But I tell you the truth, Steve, I don't get too wrapped up in it because I really do trust the people that are making the decisions. No one's going to agree with all their decisions because nobody ever agrees with any decisions anywhere. But I trust these people. They know the game. They've been around. They don't have ulterior motives as far as I know. Everybody's certainly fighting for their own, that's for sure. But you've got a broad spectrum, East Coast, West Coast. I'm okay with these people. I'm okay with trusting their opinion, even though I may disagree with what they ultimately come up with. I may have little disagreements, but I trust them. I trust them. So I don't get all up in arms about it. At least there wasn't anything that drove me nuts. I just had little questions.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of highlighted, particularly down when it comes to the grade, certain tracks losing and certain races losing their graded status, period, and moving to listed status. And I would think that some special effort would be made to allow Ellis Park some leeway when it comes to their only graded stake. I can't imagine that why it was necessary. I know how the scoring works, and I'll put the link up like I do every year. If you go to the TOBA website and go to the graded stake, the AGSC drop down, American Graded Stake Committee, the not just the criteria, but the actual scoring format and framework is there for you to read. I saw someone write a column about the winners. Look at the list of winners. The list of winners is just one part of a much larger set of criteria. Just the winner, if the winner faced four tomato cans, what difference does it make who the winner was? What matters is where those horses were coming from and going to, and it's also a long-term average. They score these races. There's a workbook that provides all the criteria evaluated, and they don't do it just willy-nilly, pell-mell. And they also don't just summarily cut a race after one bad season, one bad running of it. It has to be on the decline.
And that's why I say I have, I trust this group to do their job. This is what they do. Hammer's explained it a little.
Every year I have him explain it. And Mike Dempsey, one year, we were at Saratoga, and he was in for the meeting, because they also, they get together also several times a year to go through this and they absolutely be aware that they warn, quote unquote, they alert racetracks that, your race X is slipping and you need to address it. And a lot of it is obviously purse related. And you see, you can see what has happened in Maryland in particular, where a lot of the long-term, storied races on the Maryland calendar, they slipped. Then when things reached bottom and now the pendulum has swung back and stabilized and gone back in the other direction. And as a result, some of those races, like the Chick Lang, which should still be the Hirsch Jacobs, that's back up to a grade three after dropping to listed status. So there's a lot of working parts to the way this thing works. And, the big part of it is you got to be careful too about, people say, well, there's too many stakes. Well, stakes are important because they handle a lot of money, Johnny. I'm going to tell you, the stakes represent a mammoth portion of the handle. They attract wagering. So you can't just, slash the stakes schedule.
No, and they're so important to breeders and owners, and that's a big, huge part of the game. Some would say it's the backbone of the game. I don't know if it's the horse players. We have a lot of backbones in this game. That's all I know. We have horse players, we have breeders, we have owners. They're all backbones. I like to leave this stuff to the guys that really spend their time, guys and gals, that really spend their time hashing it out. And I think it's a complicated process. Somebody's got to do it. And unless they really screw up, I'm gonna be okay with it. I'm going to be okay with it. It's their job. And I think for the most part, they get it. Right? Every once in a while, you say, oh, man, how could this? All right. Well, here's how. Somebody can either Hammer or Tom Robbins or George Ann Hale, somebody can explain to you how it happened. It didn't, as you said, it didn't happen by accident.
No.
You may not agree with the reasoning, but they can give you a reason. And in the meantime, the claiming crown. I used to hate the claiming crown. I don't know. I think because why did I hate the claiming crown? I think I used to handicap it, and I used to get very confused because you had horses coming from all over, and they had to start for a certain price, and so it was like a chess game. These guys were getting horses eligible and just dumping them in these starter stakes is what they are, actually. He started for a certain claiming price. You know, that's, you know, something. It should be called the starter state crown, not the claiming crown, because you can't claim any of these horses on the day. But they were offered for a price within a certain time frame, so that makes sense. But I used to hate the claiming crown. Now I look forward to it. I really like digging into the PPs, handicapping the races, finding out where did they get this horse, how did they get this horse eligible for this race, how does this horse fit in this race, and I think the claiming crown is a good exercise for people learning to handicap. To, you know, very often we talk about the conditions of the race. You know, go back in the PPs and find out how each of these horses got eligible for the race. And in some cases, it's a horse that was claimed recently who the owner or the trainer probably was pretty sharp with the condition book. And they realized, you know, if we claim this horse now, you know, 4 months from now, they've got the claiming crown, this horse might fit. You know, he's going to be eligible for this race. In other cases, people owned the horse the whole time, but they dropped the horse in for a tag, and they got away with it. And so they're eligible. So the levels of, you know, sometimes if the horse ran for, you know, broke his maiden for a tag and then ran back for a tag and then started on an upward swing. So there's so many different places that these horses come, that they come to the claiming crown from, that it really is, it's interesting. And still frustrating from a handicapping point of view. I'm not going to say it's easy. It's not simple. It takes, you've got to spend time on it. You've got a lot to look at. But, you know, it's kind of found a home. It started at Canterbury Park. I think this was maybe the 20th renewal. And I think it's been at Gulfstream. This might have been the sixth or seventh consecutive year or sixth or seventh year. And they've now, I think they've agreed to go through 2021 at Gulfstream Park. And the numbers, the handle, 13.6 million, a new record on the claiming ground, topped the 11.9 mark set last year. That's a healthy increase. And of course, you know, kicking off the Gulfstream winter meet, the meet of the champions meet, as they call it. And this year, 80th anniversary for Gulfstream Park. And, you know, you're starting to read now where, you know, we've got the turf racing in California that Chad Brown shipped out and several other trainers, but Chad was most successful out there. You're starting to read in the recaps of the race, next stop is Gulfstream Park for so many top horses right now. Top horses, top jockeys. By the way, congratulations to Johnny V, 6,000 wins. That's a lot of wins. 6,000 wins is a lot, and that doesn't happen by accident. There's only the cream of the crop gets to 6,000. It's a huge accomplishment. Congrats to him. He'll be at Gulfstream, like the birds. Everybody's heading south for the winter. For that meeting, we've got the new/renovated turf course. We see lots of turf racing down there. We can look forward to as horse players, big fields. And, you know, Gulfstream's always been the place for three-year-olds. And that path has always been, Florida Derby has always been a, you know, one of the ways to win a Triple Crown race is to go through the Florida Derby, and that has continued. You know, it's California certainly has, in the last couple of years, that fellow Baffert now has kind of rewritten the book a little bit, but Florida Derby still is the way for the East Coast horses to get to Triple Crown races. And now we've got the Pegasus. And the Pegasus turf race. So, you know, this is a big meet. It really is. I think we forget about it a little bit by the end of the year, because it does kick the year off. Both, you know, Santa Anita and Gulfstream kick the year off, and now the Breeders' Cup has kind of, it's not a recent thing, but over the years, we focus a lot of our attention on the Breeders' Cup and races leading up the Breeders' Cup. And I can remember the late Bobby Frankel telling me, yeah, it doesn't matter what you do in the beginning of the year. People forget. You got to do it at the end of the year. So that kind of flips the whole calendar around. Because what happened in the beginning? We're facing a little bit of it now, I think, with the Justify Accelerate case. You know, people kind of forget what Justify was all about and how amazing that time frame was. And we're looking back now and we're saying, oh, the three-year-olds weren't that good and blah, blah, blah. You know, it fades. And yet, you know, Accelerate's accomplishments are in the here and now. He wins the Breeders' Cup and, you know, so you see the effect. But Gulfstream Park and Santa Anita, two of my favorite meetings. Santa Anita certainly has a special place in my heart. And Gulfstream, since I've been back east now, has, you know, and I've spent time at Gulfstream, actually worked there for a season and been around the racing there. That's shoved its way into a corner of my heart, too. So it was nice to see it get off and running. Congratulations to Chris Landeros.
Yeah.
Three wins on Claiming Ground Day. He only won seven races out of 122 there last year. He won three opening day. That's a great way to start the meeting. And George Navarro, he knocked down three races. And I'm still trying to figure out how George Navarro horses pay 35-60 and 30-20. I guess because he has three or four of them in the race and horse players don't know which one to. I guess you have to put them all in and just pull it. This guy wins at like 35%, and you don't want to leave out any of his horses. But here are a pair of them. And these are claiming horses. They're in starter stakes, 35-60 and 30-20. And then, of course, he has picked sense. You know, this weekend we had two of the top former claimers, I think. Now, I'm not keeping stats on this, so if anybody's got another runner that I'm missing, you may know one, Steve. But two of our top former claimers were in action this week. Basilica, out in California in the Matriarch. And then Aztec Sense. In the Jewel in the Claiming Crown. If you're familiar with the Basilica or Vasilika, she was claimed for $40,000 in February off of a win. She won eight in a row before she finished fourth fourth in the Matriarch. She won eight in a row, nine of her last 10, 10 of her last 11. Just absolutely, you know. Now, that's a claim from 2018. Obviously, outstanding. And Aztec Sense was claimed in 2017, I believe, the end of late in 2017, for 12-5 at Parks. And she's won eight consecutive, nine of her last 10 for these connections. So, you know, here's Basilica, who's a grade one winner now, and Aztec Sense winning the Jewel in the Claiming Crown, two horses that were claimed for Basilica was claimed for 40. Before that, she was claimed for 32. And and Aztec Census claim for 12.5. Great stories. You know, I guess Lava Man is maybe the all time great claim. Was he claimed for? I want to say 50, but I could be wrong.
Eddie Haskell won on Saturday for Mark Glatt. Early on the Del Mar card, I've always been a fan, and he was, I think, taken. I think Glatt took him for 50, that was the race the calculator ran, and ran okay, actually. If you didn't see that turf sprint.
Yeah, that was, I think Rosario. Rosario's made a little bent in the Southern California.
Yeah,
took him 5 minutes to get back.
Took him 5 minutes, exactly. Although we should mention that with the end of the meet yesterday at Del Mar, Drayton Van Dyke wins the fall season, the Bing Crosby meet, over Flavian Pratt.
Two fine young riders there.
Absolutely.
Young riders. Now you've got Rosario joining the.
Yeah, they'll have to deal with him.
Yeah, it's going to be a great winner. Out there. And I don't, you know, the two of Rosario's stakes wins came on Chad Brown horses, so.
Right.
You better hope. Ronnie better hope that Chad keeps sending him out there.
Johnny, say hello to Kenny Kirkner, who just sat down with me.
Kenny Kirkner never got a dinner.
Good morning, Johnny. How you been?
Oh, I'm wonderful, Kenny.
All right.
Steve mentioned your name this morning. I was so happy to hear you busted out of the retirement home.
I'm telling you, it was a tough one, too, in Florida. You know, those old folks just don't let you go.
Too much golf, Kenny? What happened?
It was too much golf. The handicap got down to one, Johnny, and I just, you know, once it would have hit scratch, I'd have been out of it. I'd have given too many strokes to sandbaggers like you.
As old as you are now, Kenny, you're getting close to shooting your age, aren't you?
Oh, you're a troll.
Wow.
Actually, I did flirt with it a couple months ago. I did shoot a 66, so I was getting a little closer.
The man can play.
Clearly. I'm impressed. I'm impressed. Johnny, I'm going to send you out into the day.
Steve, thank you very much. Teddy, great to hear you back in action. If I'd have known you were going to be in Arizona, I'd have left the friendly confines and been there just to salute you and welcome you back.
All right. Well, I know you're going to make a trip south, so we'll get together down there.
All right.
Johnny D, XB Johnny D, everybody. And as we get closer toward the end of the year, we can also start to look forward to Beat the Host. I got the Beat the Host info came out from Johnny the other day. So another season of Beat the Host is in the offing. Let's take the top of the hour break here. We'll come back and talk to Kenny about this new endeavor and signed on with Sport Tech. And there's going to be a lot of sports betting conversation at the symposium. And really this last hour, we can start to turn our attention, I think, toward some of the symposium work as it's not open yet, but the little trade show floor is taking shape. By this evening, the welcome reception and all that. And then tomorrow and Wednesday, the meet of the 45th symposium on gaming, racing and gaming, and we'll have the students. I've seen a couple of students so far this morning, but back after this, and Kenny, I'm not going to let you go without a little reverse tri-key conversation, because even though I haven't talked to you the last in a couple of Breeders' Cup lead-ups, I push it on everybody, and a lot of people have adopted that and have done very well with it, and it's really, it sort of changed their approach. And in fact, I I owed this conversation. I had a couple of questions around Breeders' Cup time about it, and people asking you for an explanation. Kenny will talk about his own outstanding wagering philosophy when we come back. Hour three, day one from the symposium here in Tucson. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.